All right, coming up this week on The Course of Life, it's our Mega Masters Week episode. Yes, it's arrived with not one, but two great guest interviews. George Savarikas from the Golf Channel joins us to share his stories in the game and his Masters thoughts. Plus, we go in-depth on Augusta National with Jeremy Schilling from the Teeing It Up podcast. But first, we tee off Masters Week with the first tee shot. It's a zero-calorie, sugar-free drink that's 5 seconds of effort for 5 hours of enhanced performance on the course. First tee shot is made to elevate your game and keep you locked in till the 19th hole. Each 2 ounce bottle rich in vitamin C can be taken on its own or mixed in with your water or smoothie. So if you want that ready to go feeling and want to try first tee shot right now, you can go to firstteeshot.com and enter promo code course to receive 20% off your purchase of first tee shot, the pre-golf supplement that's far superior to that early morning coffee or cocktail to try and shake off those first tee jitters. Again, that's firstteeshot.com and the promo code course to receive 20% off your purchase today.
Hello, interwebs, or should I say, hello, friends.
Oh, yes.
It's a tradition unlike any other. It's the Masters. Alex, we've made it. It's April in Augusta, Georgia. The azaleas are blooming. It's beautiful as always. Never mind what the weather is going to be like come Sunday. It's our favorite week of the year.
I've just been pre-gaming with the theme song, Augusta, for like the last 30 minutes in anticipation of our conversation for our Mega Masters episode. Like I said at the top, it's a huge one and arguably everyone's favorite golf week of the year. Mike, it's the one week of the year when like the whole sports world just stops and watches golf and just admits that golf is at the forefront of sports. I can't really put my finger on it. Every year it's something slightly different to me, but I'm just what kind of makes this week so special to you as just someone sitting at home on the couch watching like the rest of us?
I think what it always is it kind of marks a combination of the real beginning of the PGA Tour season. It's a little different this year with the Players moved up, but it kind of signifies that golf is here. We're getting in that time of year where you kind of want to watch every weekend. And also, I think it signifies that it's getting warmer across the country. The snow is melting up north. Although as we record this on a Tuesday evening, my mother sent me a picture today of snow falling in her backyard in New Hampshire. So maybe it's not quite over yet, but I think it helps, you know, it gets everybody excited about being able to go out and play during the whole year. You know, you get the best golfers in the world to come together along with the best golfers that have ever played the game that are always coming out to this tournament to play. I think it's that kind of that nostalgia that goes along with it, that you have both the best current players along with all the past winners at Augusta coming out to play Thursday and Friday. And of course, I mean, the par three contest on Wednesday is just phenomenal.
Always fun. Great way to start the week as well. And like you mentioned with the venue itself, just not a blade of grass is out of place there. I don't know if any golf course shows more beautifully on television for the viewer at home than Augusta National does. Even if you're not even a fan of the game, you can just admire the beauty of the venue and enjoy that for the entire week.
I think what it really is what's impressive is I read a few years ago that the grounds crew at Augusta will actually freeze the flower buds so they don't bloom until Masters Week. And it's just that meticulous attention to detail that is so impressive and really takes Augusta National and puts it on an entirely different plane of golf course.
For sure. And you're teasing our conversation later with Jeremy Schilling. We get into the land sale. We get into the flower. We get into the drainage system. We go deep in the weeds of Augusta National and the Players preparing with some rain in the forecast. But like we mentioned, and we mentioned it before, Augusta's drainage system is like top notch. So they can get this course from soft to rock hard in like 24 hours flat, even if a rainstorm comes through. So it'll be interesting to see if so, what any factor that the weather plays. It's kind of a jaded forecast for the weekend. You want it to be sunny and beautiful for all 4 days, Mike, but there may be a little adversity based on the forecast. I know you were dealing with some storms yourself today, so we'll see how it plays out for the weekend on the weather front.
Yeah, it's certainly going to be interesting. Of course, these first 2 days are what we can look at right now and how Players went out there and practiced or didn't practice in the rain, or in Tiger's case, practicing all by his lonesome on Sunday night.
Great tweet from Sir Nick Faldo. Just took a snapshot of Tiger all by himself late Sunday evening pre-Masters week. Very eerie tweet to kind of set the stage for Tiger's week. And it was very funny, Mike. I know you were ragging on Stephen A. Smith on last week's episode. Stephen A. Smith was leading the Sports Center desk, if you can imagine that, and Scott Van Pelt was at Augusta on the grounds. Stephen Smith just made two egregious errors when he was referencing Tiger's Thursday tee time, thinking that the tournament started on Wednesday. That was his first mistake. And then he made the dreaded error, Mike. He called it Augusta Country Club. Just, you can't do that, Stephen A. It's Augusta National, whether it be at for the Masters all week. But yeah, it's an exciting week for Tiger for sure. And it's the first time in a while where I feel like he's been at full 100% capacity. So definitely a lot of storylines with the world's best.
Yeah, you know, it was interesting. Of course, he was sporting a new polo during his press conference with
his head cover, his Frank.
Frank, sitting there on his chest. That was kind of interesting.
Very playful. Yeah, that's got to be some sort of backdoor sponsor or something.
There's something going on there. Not that he needs a sponsor. He's got plenty of money. But yeah. I just think Tiger Woods, we were talking about this before we started recording. Tiger is just hilarious in a press conference. He's at that point in his career where he just doesn't care. Not that I think he ever really did during press conferences, but just referencing where he was asked, do you need to win this week?
Need.
And he need. And he was like, do I need to win? No. I want to win. It'd be pretty nice.
Yeah, there's not much really he needs in terms of golf course performance in his lifetime. Yeah. I mean, it's really hard to justify any of that.
Yeah. But, and a really interesting stat that I saw too the other day about Tiger is that he's going into this round at a higher world ranking than he did when he debuted at Augusta.
Wild. Yeah. So talk about a pendulum over 22 years there.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah, so we'll be watching Tiger for sure. We got to bring up Phil as well, too, Mike. Yeah. In a continuation of our story last week, we told a classic tale of him just upstaging Jake Owen, who went and talked trash about the hashtag The Match, asking for $29.99 back. Phil slipped him a $100 bill. And lo and behold, Mike, we see Phil spotted on the practice range at Augusta. And just by pure accident, a $100 bill is hanging out of his pocket as he's making practice swings in the range. He confirmed that Jake Owen story. So Phil having himself a week on the heels of that story.
I just love this side of Phil that we're starting to see out of him. I want to see more of this side of Phil as he continues through his career. He's just kind of flaunting his wealth right now. And at the same time, I feel like he's saying, you're going to get a show this week, that he's going to really push hard. He's going to give us the golf that we want to see.
Hey, he's won here three times. Who says he can't do it again? So that'll be and Phil this week, storyline wise. And a couple other guys, Mike, I want to compare to, you know, DJ, Justin Rose. Those are favorites, Brooke Koepka, that are going to be around in contention in the weekend. But I want to talk about two potential storylines, Mike. First, you got Rory McIlroy looking to get that career Grand Slam. He's won all the three other majors. And you also have Jordan Spieth kind of potentially waking up maybe and finding kind of his home at a course that he loves and performs so well at. I guess kind of which one do you think is more likely, or which one do you think would be kind of cooler to see between Rory or Spieth getting it done this weekend?
I feel like both are equally likely. I mean, either of these guys, if they're in their right game through the weekend, they're going to be almost unbeatable. I think Rory has shown that he can, this season especially, kind of be that perfect four rounds of golf.
Yeah, Sawgrass.
If I had to pick one that I wanted to see more than the other, and I like Rory, but I think Spieth is pretty likable. I really enjoy watching him out there on the course. I'm a bit of a Spieth fan, so I've got to go with him.
He's so popular when he's got it rolling, especially at a venue like Augusta. You know, his game just kind of more resembles the average guy getting it around the course, whereas Rory is just an absolute movie to watch every time he swings the golf club. But it's just so unrealistic to compare any normal human's golf game from the way he swings the club. So it should be interesting to watch those guys this week, Mike. Just in case everyone doesn't know, I have my picks out already on my Twitter of who I like to win this week at Course of Life 1. But Mike, I want to run run through a few fun prop bets. It is major championship season, so we get some random things that you can bet on during the course of this week. And I guess one thing we can look at, you know, lo and behold, you know, whatever happens on a 4-day span of this tournament, you can at least look at Friday and the cut. So this course is going to be a little soft, Mike, with this weather. And the cut over under is at 148.5 strokes. So do you think the cut is going to be at better or worse than 4.5 over par this week? Which way would you lean there?
I feel like it's going to be better. The course is going to be set up for them to score. And guys really, they still go low at Augusta. So I think you got to say better. It's going to be better.
I agree. And then I'm going to harp on that with the number two that I want to talk to you about. So I like the better there for under 4.5 over par. How about the worst score by anybody over under 82.5? Mike, I don't really know if anyone's going to go that crazy. I was looking at some of the older guys in the field, and a lot of them have history of playing in the mid to high 70s for most of their rounds. I think I'm going to give the field the benefit of the doubt and say everyone's going to shoot an 82 or better on Thursday and Friday, at least.
Yeah, you know, I honestly wouldn't be surprised if someone shoots an 83 or an 84. But at the same time, if you put a gun to my head and told me to bet this one way or the other, yeah, I'm going to say we're going to be under. We're going to be 82 or better.
For sure. A couple others I wanted you to look at, too. I didn't bet on any of the lefties, but there's a great lefty prop bet. You can just, for 14-1 odds, Mike, you can put $2 down, try and win about 30, and you just get all the lefties. So you get Phil, you get Bubba Watson, you get Mike Weir, whose game's been in complete disarray for the last 10 years, but he's a past champion there. I think you get an amateur or two maybe, but yeah, if you just want to pick a lefty and your team lefty, 14-1 odds that a lefty wins, and they have good history at this course for sure.
I don't feel like that's a bad bet. I feel like you're 14-1 odds. I feel like the chance of Phil or Bubba just putting together four rounds, because you never know what Bubba's really going to do at Augusta.
Yeah.
But that could be great money.
Yeah. So those are the three that I'm watching. And then the joke prop that I did find for you, Mike, per your intro at the top of the show, the number of times that Jim Nance says, "Hello, friends." The over-under, Mike, is at 5.5. Break that down for me, whether you like the over or under there.
We're going to break this down. So we know he's going to say it at least four times. He's going to say it at least once each day. So now he just needs to say it two more times. He's probably going to say it. I would say he's probably going to say it really at least twice on Saturday and Sunday. He's going to say it at the Open on Saturday and Sunday, and then he's going to probably say it again as they start to get later into the round before the key groupings start teeing off and those leaders start teeing off. So, yeah, over, easy.
Or maybe like a back nine reset, like as soon as the final group gets to the 10th tee and there's just like a million guys that could win the tournament, that would be just a money time for a hello, friends, who hadn't joined us yet.
The other thing is, I'd be curious what the over-under is just on him saying friends, because if you add in hello friends along with him saying well friends, because I'm sure he's going to say that phrase a lot as well, you could get this number super high.
Absolutely. So that's a quick look at some of the fun prop bets coming up for this Masters week. We're hoping everyone enjoys the wagers they place out there, and best of luck to all you out there. Like I said, it's our mega Masters week episode though, Mike, and we had a chance to sit down with a real great pairing, I guess.
Yeah, you know, we're all winners right now as we get to listen to a couple of conversations. You had the chance, Alex, to chat with our friend and fellow Quinnipiac alum, Jeremy Schilling of the Teeing It Up podcast. But first, before we get to him, here's a conversation you had with Golf Channel's own George Savarikas.
All right, next up on the tee, originally from Wilmette, Illinois, now hailing from Orlando, Florida, where he is a jack of all trades for the Golf Channel, host and reporter for Golf Central, and he co-hosts the Pro-Am Pod on Golf Channel Podcast as well. It's George Savarikas joining the Course of Life. George, how's it going on this Masters week?
Good, how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for hopping on. I wanted to get right into it. Before we get to the current landscape in golf and Masters Week and all its glory, just wanted to touch on you and your golf story. You actually kind of got to live out a random bucket list item that I have myself, which is to caddy in a professional golf tournament. So I saw you caddied on theweb.com back in the day. I was curious how that kind of came about and what that experience was like for you.
Yeah, it was cool. I grew up caddying in the North Shore of Chicago at a few different clubs, but the last one I was at for a while was the Glen Club. and they had a web.com event from 2002 to 2007, and I started caddying there basically in 2003. So it's just one of those, I can't remember which, like the second or third year they had the event. Okay. You usually have like 10 honor caddies kind of hanging out and just waiting to see if a pro needed a guy that week. So that's kind of how it came about.
Very cool. Who were you on the bag for?
Chip Beck.
Oh, nice. One of the 59ers. Very cool.
Exactly. Missed the cut that week, but it was a cool experience nonetheless.
Very cool. So I guess now everyone's really curious. Kind of take us from your days early in golf when you were caddying and working at a club to kind of how you got yourself to the gig you now have at Golf Channel. You've been there for 6 years now and you're a staple at the network. What sort of strings do you kind of pull along the way to kind of get your career to where it is now with Golf Channel?
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you kind of the cliff notes. I graduated college from the University of Missouri, was looking for a job. Craig Pan was a longtime anchor at Golf Channel, and he went to Missouri well before I did. But one of my professors was classmates with Craig, and this was a guy that I played golf with a bunch in my free time, so he knew how passionate I was about the game. So he had me reach out to Craig to see if there are any behind-the-scenes jobs. Golf Channel actually was going to fly me out for an interview. This was probably fall of 2007. And then received an offer to try an on-air job in northern Wisconsin. So decided to do that route and then maintain my contacts at Golf Channel. Waited about 5 years and then finally thought that I was getting to the point where I was ready. So I reached back out to Craig. He looked at my work, said, yeah, I think you're good to go as far as being a candidate that they'd consider. And then circled back with the people that I knew there, sent an email to two different guys, didn't get a response. So 2 weeks later, I was like, all right, screw this. I'm going to send the same email every 2 weeks until they tell me to get lost.
Persistence. And then,
exactly. So then the second batch of emails, one of the guys responded. I had an interview a week or two later, had to wait for like a month because I think they had 7 or 8 candidates they're interviewing, and I was just lucky enough to land the job.
Very cool. And so obviously you're now a fixture there. You've kind of taken a lot of the reins that Craig Can had there originally in his role in hosting duties on the network. And you've been there for 6 years. Like I mentioned, you've had the opportunity to interview all the greats in the game, Tiger, Phil, Arnie, Jack. Everyone's got cool stories with the legends of the game. I got to be a sign boy when I was a kid for Arnie for 18 holes at a Champions Tour event. And that was absolutely one of the coolest golf days of my life. I'd love to hear kind of if you have a notable story being around Arnie or Jack are those legends of the game that still grace us now.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite Arnie story would be I did the last interview with him sadly before he passed. So this was just a couple weeks prior to that. And I mean, he was still sharp and with it. He would have his good days and bad days, but it was kind of a yearly tradition. I would MC and be a part of this event called the Latrobe Classic, where they, for charity, would have a group of donors who would play Bay Hill and then fly up to Latrobe and play Latrobe Country Club. And then Arnie would be waiting in Latrobe for the guys to get off the plane. And then you'd do a banquet dinner that night that Arnie would be a part of. So each year while the guys were out playing, I would interview Arnie on state of the game and just kind of catch up with him. So I was fortunate in the sense that after 4 or 5 years, it was kind of my yearly thing to look forward to my chat with Arnie. So this year, the final one that we did it in 2016, there's a group of guys kind of hanging around Arnie, and I go up to him and say, hey, Mr. Palmer, have our interview in about 5 minutes, and the guys are still talking to him. So I didn't want to be rude and interrupt the conversation because everyone wants to steal a minute or have a moment just chit-chatting with the king.
Of course,
So he looks at me after, it's probably like 7 or 8 minutes now. He goes, George, are we just going to sit around and bullshit all day, or do you have an interview?
I love it.
And he gave you that like smile and that wink. Like you're always in on the joke also. So it's like, yeah, right away. Sorry, guys. We got to go. I got to talk to Arnie now. But he always had that sense of humor. And he's, I mean, you obviously got to experience it being a sign boy on the Champions Tour, but just the way he radiated and people would light up around him. He was a special personality and a special guy.
Yeah, I mean, he had full-on conversations with me on the golf course when I was 11 years old, and it just goes to show you how he touched people across the game, and he remembered you every single year and took that moment to joke with you. Very, very cool story about his legacy. Obviously, another one I want to touch on is obviously kind of your interactions with Tiger. I've seen you interview him many times post-round, and, you know, he's an interesting person in terms of his associations with media and what you're able to kind of get and draw off him when you speak with him. Talk a little bit about what it's like interviewing Tiger and kind of being, you know, on camera with him and some notable interactions you may have had with him.
Well, the first live interview I ever did with Tiger was his 79th win that Friday at Bridgestone when he was flirting with 59 and he was 9-under through 13.
Okay.
And then shot a 61, and this is my first event where I'm the reporter for Golf Channel, so it's kind of baptism by fire.
Yeah, threw you right in there.
Full Tiger Woods experience. I'd say, having covered other sports, like my first TV job was I was covering Brett Favre's last season with the Packers, and then I was in Arizona. Remember covering Steve Nash as the Suns went to a Western Conference final. So I've seen big name athletes across kind of all spectrums. And it's a combination of the way Tiger carries himself and just the crowd that forms around his interviews are unlike anything else in golf. And it feels like you're at a big time sporting event whenever you talk to Tiger. And Tiger's like most alpha type athletes. They kind of want to see initially if they can intimidate you or what you're made of. So if you stand there confidently and are able to kind of joke with him and have an easygoing rapport, then he can tell that you're comfortable. If he feels like he can kind of walk over you, then he might not treat you with the same, I don't want to say like respect, but there's definitely a different power dynamic.
The level of interaction, so, yeah.
And I'd say he's the one guy that I still get nervous, but not like it's a nervous energy because there's adrenaline pumping through the crowd and the environment whenever he comes up. So it's not like the first time I ever interviewed him, then you're nervous because, oh my God, it's Tiger Woods. Now it's you have the nerves because it's more the adrenaline kicking in that, hey, this is a big moment, especially if he's in contention. You know, a ton of eyeballs are watching, not just around you in the gallery, but on TV as well.
Absolutely. And Kay, credit to you for all the work you put in to put yourself in that situation. So it's a real good nervous from your perspective. Absolutely.
I mean, it's a fun energy, fun type of nerve because, you know, it's like I said, you know, it's a big moment and he stands alone. There's no other golfer who has that type of aura around him.
He does. I'm here in Austin, Texas, and I've been volunteering at the Match Play since it got here a few years ago. And the energy this past weekend here was unreal with the addition of Tiger to the field. And hopefully we'll be seeing him for years to come. Just the electricity he puts to any event is crazy indeed. One other interaction I want to talk with you about. Not sure if it was maybe nerves that came to you, a really notable interaction that made waves a few years ago. Unfortunately, George, had nothing to do with your world-class interview skills. It had to do with a lovely gesture from your pal Billy Horschel on camera. I got to get your perspective on that story. Tell me what happened there, and I want to just get what was your initial reaction when you either saw him do that in the locker room or on camera afterwards.
Well, I felt bad for Billy because we had told them it was the CBS crew doing it, but it was on Golf Channel to let us know if they were taking any rain delay footage. Because we were stuck in the clubhouse that week for New Orleans. It was a 54-hole event that finished on Monday. It rained like 5 or 6 inches. So it was just rain delay after rain delay. And we were stuck in the clubhouse, and I would interview a guy. Then we'd go to, like, taped rain delay coverage for an hour, and then I'd interview a guy. So they had the cameras there the whole time. So you figured they were off air the entire time.
Of course,
so when
yeah.
Billy flicked off me, he obviously figured that we were off camera, but I had been talking trash with him and Charlie Hoffman. We were betting like $20 on what time play might resume, and I had been texting with one of the tour officials, and I thought they had said that play was done for the day. So initially, when Billy was flicking me off, I was going to Charlie to collect $20 from him because he had said they were going to have a meeting at 5. And then the funny part was, 10 minutes later, the tour amended their statement and they had a meeting at 5. So I not only had to give Charlie the 20 back that he had given me, I lost the $20 bet. So Jeez. Billy was flicking me off because he thought they had lost the bet, and it turns out the joke was on me at the end of it. But so that was kind of the backstory. It's just the camera guys didn't give us a heads up that they were actually going to take the shot live.
Yep. Great screenshot moment created there for golf Twitter for years sure, to come, for sure. So I'm glad you're on the receiving end of that. You mentioned Charlie Hoffman. I mean, that's a perfect transition to talking real quickly for a few minutes about Masters Week. He's always a guy you see early in the week there on the leaderboard. The golf world loves talking about this tournament. It's funny, George, like every other tournament is just a sporting event, but the golf world talks about Masters Week like it's like a religion and we're all going to church or something like that. I mean, you cover the game week in and week out. Tell everyone kind of what makes this week special to you and makes it just a little bit different than every other golf week of the year.
And for me, describing what makes it special, I've never actually been to Augusta because every year I've worked at Golf Channel, I'm in Orlando doing updates.
Working in the studio.
Doing studio stuff in our headquarters. So I'm saying this as someone who's never stepped foot on the grounds there. But to me, what makes it so special isn't just the tradition and the list of winners that we've seen. It's a combination of that coupled with that it's the same course every year. So you have familiarity. You see the same pin positions. You're able to compare eras and generations of finishes that we've seen. That, and it produces the best finishes year in and year out and the best class of player. And if you look at the average world rank the last 7 years of the winner of the Masters, it's like 12.3. And then the last, I think, 8 or 9 years, only one guy outside of the top 20 has won the Masters. That was Charles Schwartz in 2011. So it does a good job of identifying the best golfer playing at his best level. And I think that, coupled with everything that goes into the aura of Augusta National, is what makes it so special year in and year out.
For sure. Yeah. And so on the podcast here, we love every week to throw around a handful of guys that we like and we bet to win on the week. Obviously, like you mentioned, this is a pretty stock week when, you know, I'll be making my annual Jordan Spieth bet at Augusta. I'll be making my annual Tiger bet because I can't miss out on him potentially winning a green jacket. But how about some other guys, maybe not right at the top of the list, that you may be looking for to have a good performance, who are a little under the radar this week?
I'm going to give my guy Tripp Eisenhower some credit because he said this earlier, but I'd like to pick, the more I look at it, Louis Oosthuizen. He's 19th in the world, runner-up at Valspar, played pretty well at match play. He's had his close calls at Augusta and, I mean, the career runner-up Grand Slam. So that would be, even though he's 19th, I still would say he's somewhat under the radar because you don't really hear anyone talking about Louis Oosthuizen. If I'm going the favorite route, I would love to see Rory get it done. I just don't think it's going to happen. I think Justin Rose would be my guy. If I have to pick the short list of five favorites, he'd be the one that I think will finally get it done. So that would be the two names there. As far as kind of a long shot pick, I'd really have to dive into it. I'm not really sure who of like the Charlie Hoffman. Like, Charlie's playing well. I mean, he could easily throw out like a 68, 69 the first day.
Oh yeah, always good for that.
Normal like T12 or T15 and call it a day.
Call it a week. Yeah, for sure. The one name I'm just throwing out there just so I can be on record is, what if we had a Jim Furyk moment as one final moment for him in a major? Could be really special. He's been playing some good golf recently.
That'd be cool. It's a lot of golf course, but you got to be a great ball striker there. So that's something that Jim is able to do. That is, from what I've been told, the most important statistic is greens and regulation.
For sure, George. All right, we've got a couple more minutes left with you. I just want to fire some rapid fire questions on the Masters. You can either go one way or the other. I guess my first question for you is, what's your favorite hole on the course, just out of the 18, and why?
13, Race Creek. I just love
the backdrop.
And then I love the awkward lies these guys face with ball above your feet, trying to hit like a 4-iron onto a green. Like, it, you just don't see that a lot where guys are faced with that type of risk reward. Obviously now in the modern game, it's not hard for them to get home in two, but it still presents some uncomfortable angles and positions for these guys. So I enjoy watching that.
Good stuff. And my next question for you. So I'm going to have a three screen stream going this weekend. It'll be Golf Channel on one stream, the network coverage. And then that third screen, George, would you be going live at Amen Corner? Would you go 15 and 16 or maybe something like the driving range? What would you pick there for screen number three this weekend?
You can't do tournament practice area. I would say Amen Corner, depending on groups, that would probably be my starting point. And then later in the day, shift to 15, 16.
Yeah, I love Luke Elvey on the call. One of my most underrated favorite broadcasters in golf. He's got a great voice for those hole-in-ones on 16. And last question, I know you haven't been yet. Two really cheap $1.50 menu items on Augusta National's menu this week. It's the famous pimento cheese sandwich or the egg salad sandwich. Which one would you go with?
Pimento cheese. You don't know how long those egg salad sandwiches have been out for.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Chicken salad, tuna salad, egg salad. But on a sandwich, a little leery unless I'm seeing it made in front of me. So to be safe, to ensure that I'm not jeopardizing a nice, tranquil day of watching the Masters at Augusta, pimento cheese, safe play.
Yeah, safe on the digestive system as well, for sure.
You got it.
Well, George, we'll be locked into your coverage all week and all year. You can follow him at George Savarikas on Twitter, and it's at George Savarikas GC on Instagram. George, so what's your schedule looking like for the upcoming weeks and months? Is it going to be studio, or will you be on site for tournaments coming up at all?
Yeah, it's kind of a combination. I'll be studio for April and May. I'm doing the NCAA women's and men's selection shows.
Nice.
And then PGA Championship, I'll be reporting from. And after the PGA, it's kind of a nutty stretch where I think 9 out of 10 weeks I'll be reporting. I do men's and women's NCAAs, RBC Heritage, or not RBC Canadian Open, U.S. Open, Travelers, Rocket Mortgage. So that's kind of my stretch. And after that, I have a week off of solitude, which would be nice, beginning of July.
Love it. Well, enjoy the upcoming stretch run and that time off as well. Again, George Savarikas, hey, thanks so much for joining us on The Course of Life, and we'll catch up with you down the road.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
This Monster Masters episode of Course of Life is sponsored by Izzo Golf, the creator of the world's finest golf bags. Find the best bag that's perfect for your game. Whether you want a stand or carry bag or a single or dual strap, Izzo Golf has you covered. Featuring power pockets to keep your devices charged, magnetic ball pockets, and free embroidery. Plus, hit the course with the Swami 5000, one of the fastest and easiest GPS devices on the market today. Featuring accurate distances to front, center, and back of greens, auto hole advancement, shot distance measurement, and carry distances to hazards and doglegs. Preloaded with over 38,000 courses, this GPS can help improve your game with just the click of a button. Plus, Izzo Golf carries dozens of golf accessories to give you the protection you crave for your clubs while making sure you're stepping up to the tee box in style. Visit their website at www.izzo.com today. Izzo Golf, innovation and features designed for golfers by golfers.
All right, next up on the tee from the swamps of New Jersey, he's a fellow graduate of myself and Mike's alma mater, Quinnipiac University. Also an avid golfer and even more avid tweeter about all things golf and the world of sports. It's the host of the Teeing Up podcast, Jeremy Schilling, now joining us on The Course of Life. Jeremy, thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure. I don't believe I have ever been called an avid tweeter before, so that's a new compliment for me.
You are indeed. You're in the six digits in total tweets. So that's all everyone needs to know at home. It's at Jay Schill, talking all things golf and the world of sports. And obviously we have you on because it's Masters Week. So let's not waste any time. It's one of yours and mine and Mike's and everyone's favorite weeks of the golf season. You know, there's been a lot of great tournaments so far in 2019, but kind of this is the official kickoff for a lot of people's golf season with the first major championship. So before we get into everything on Thursday and Sunday, Jeremy, I want to talk to you just a little bit about kind of the buildup throughout tournament week and what's kind of progressed with the last several years. Now having the women's amateur tournament the weekend before, the drive chip and putt the weekend before, and the par three championship, which has been going on the Wednesday before for years now. Talk a little bit about some of your favorite parts of the buildup at Masters Week as we head closer to the real thing starting on Thursday.
I'll say this. The Augusta National Women's Amateur this morning was incredible. Earlier this afternoon, as we tape this Saturday afternoon, was incredible. And what Jennifer Kupcho did falling behind after the front nine, barely making a bogey putt on 10, and she got to 11-tee, and you could just see her try to regain herself and hit an insane hybrid on 13 to 6 or so feet for birdie. For eagle. Makes birdie on 15 after hitting another insane hybrid, hooking around those left trees. And then in the end, after Maria Fassi had some issues walking off with a birdie, a walk-off birdie for a four-shot victory and 10-under par 67, coming home in 32. And
crazy.
Nicholas,
yeah, that's an awesome finish there.
And joins Nicholas, Crenshaw, Mickelson, and Woods is the only five people to have won an NCAA individual title and in a tournament at Augusta National.
Yeah, it's really cool. So this is just that Saturday before, and it's already kind of wetting your taste buds for the rest of the week. You get three, four, five, six, seven looks at the course before we even get to Thursday and the real tournament gets going. This year, the National Women's Amateur, they even got your own music on Twitter. I saw you tweeted out the theme song. And the Masters theme music is iconic for golf and really pretty much any sports fan. It's synonymous with the entire week. I guess what is it in your mind that makes kind of the theme music of this whole week special to people that watch at home?
Let me back up for a second because I just want to point one thing out. Jennifer Kupcho got a migraine on the eighth hole and had blurry vision in her left eye and had it for four golf holes. And something about Augusta National, she knew it would pass, and once it passed, she put down the throttle. And we look at Sergio in past years, gets that great break off 13, everything changes. Phil used that shot out of the pine straw on 13 to change everything. We've seen one shot make every sort of difference at Augusta National, so that's just that. Number two, to your question about theme music, for a lot of people – Well, first of all, the Masters has used the same song, which is called Augusta by Dave Loggins forever.
Love it.
Number two, the highlight music, Thrill of Victory by a band called E.S. Possumus, has become synonymous with the event. And I think that's what it is, Alex. It is that you've got people who have grown up with the same song and the same songs, plural, becoming the soundtrack to their event. And that's why I think you've seen backlashes at times when the players gets new theme music or, just the really depressing state that people were in after NBC lost the USGA rights. And that means that in celebration of Man by Yanni was going to go away. And it came back obviously 1 year later with bagpipes for the Open. But I think that's what it is. I think just like tonight, and when this is put out, this will already have happened, but the Final Four has its theme music. NFL on Fox has that theme music. It's how one of my friends walked into his wedding. It wasn't to any great song. It was the NFL on Fox theme.
Yeah, it just induces a chemical reaction in your brain that just reminds you of great times in sport. It's really cool.
It is very weird. Very odd, but that's the way we are.
And, very cool stuff.
that's the way this is. And, the other thing about it that I would just say, is that, I think that the Masters itself, the music, the aura, the dogwoods and pines, people forget the Masters theme song has lyrics and, Augusta, those dogwoods and pines, they play on my mind like a song. Just the ambiance of that place breathes music for a lot of people. It's holy.
It is.
It's holy ground.
It is very Very ceremonial. Yeah, so perfect transition. Let's get to the grounds and talk about the layout itself for a second. I, as a guy just kind of watching from the clouds, haven't seen too much specific change. I heard that one par four maybe a little bit longer that I saw briefly on Twitter a couple weeks ago. But let's talk about the course and I guess, if anything, what's different and what are we watching for this week that's changed at Augusta National? We're all so used to seeing the course every year, so these holes are kind of stamped in our minds. But what, if anything, has kind of changed the layout this year?
Number five is now 495, and that's the biggest change. And if you do some Twitter Googling or if you go back to my history, you will see the side-by-side, the side-by-side aerial of where the new Dion 5 is. And the point of why they did this was that they wanted to get the full clubs back in to the hands and give them longer shots. And they're able because they're Augusta National, to get Berkman's Road, which is the road that borders on number four and the edge of the property on that side and on four and five. They were able to move it over, literally move a road over and get that tee back there. So now at 495, it brings the bunkers more into play, but more of what people are expecting is it's going to force people to the right more. And as a result of being forced to the right, because it's a longer shot, now you've got to really watch yourself on that kind of undulating green. Nobody else has said anything about any changes. No one who has gone down there has seen any changes. Number 13 was not touched. For those who don't know, the Augusta National Golf Club made a deal with the Augusta Country Club. That's correct. There's a golf course that borders the Augusta National Golf Course. It is the Augusta Country Club to purchase,
like the redheaded stepchild of Augusta National,
purchase
basically
the land that is right behind Amen Corner. So right behind 11 green, 12 green, 13 tee, and
that's the famous spot.
And they have agreed to redo the golf holes that'll be affected by what the Augusta National people have termed to be a land acquisition for the betterment of the tournament in terms of being able to move through operational vehicles and emergency vehicles in the case of a medical issue. While that is very a legitimate cool thing, and that will help a whole lot of people and help them and help CBS, but also help anybody who has a medical event somewhere on Amen Corner, because it is a fairly long way away from where the main medical things are if you have a medical issue. Everybody thinks that this is a land acquisition to make number 13 longer, but that has not been done. There has been nothing else touched to 13 besides, or nothing else touched on the golf course besides the enlargement of number five to 495. And that's that.
Yeah. So those are the changes to the course, and Augusta love it. Just buying out land left and right, just throwing their money around, making the experience even better for everyone.
They got all the money in the world people say Apple has the most cash on hand, which they do of any Fortune 500 company. I think Augusta National may have the most money on hand of any major golf course.
And just like under the rug money too, that you just can't see with the public eye. Love it. So Augusta National getting the venue ready as well for this week. And obviously there have been tons of memories in the history of this course and this tournament in recent memory. Obviously, wins from Patrick Reed and Sergio Garcia kind of getting off the schneid for them. Some recent memories of mine, Jeremy, Bubba's win in the playoff. I'm still thinking about that hook wedge from the crazy lie in the woods to set up his victory there. Talk to us a little bit about maybe some of your favorite recent moments in Augusta National and Masters history specifically.
97 in Augusta changed my life. So let's just put that
the
out.
The Tiger route. Absolutely.
Yes. Yes.
That's a hard stop for sure.
Number two, I have to talk about 2006 for a second. Now, people are going to say 2005. I'll get to 2005 in a moment. 2006, I was one of the few people in my class who did not go on spring break to the Bahamas, which happened to fall during Masters Week. Instead, I was checking out a college. And the highlight of one of the main highlights of that trip was watching the resumption of play after a suspension and Sunday morning at 8 a.m. From a hotel in Cleveland. So there's that.
Great spot. What a glorious location that is.
Yes. Everything about the 05 one, from the fact that it wasn't on TV the fact that SportsCenter was able to throw, or sorry, ESPN was able to throw out some cameras, even though they didn't have the rights at the time to shoot that stuff, and just waiting every 30 minutes for the Mike Tirico, Andy North update to see what Tiger and DeMarco were doing around Amen Corner on that Sunday morning after classic the suspension.
Yeah.
And then more recently, I think you have to look at what Bubba did. You have to look at what Adam Scott did for a country. Let's just not, you know, just keep it to him. I mean, that changed the way a country, you know, has embraced things. What Spieth did in 14, you know, just starting out was incredible. The 15 run, especially Thursday, Friday, and that pitch on Saturday on 18 to keep the lead at that number was big. And then you go to these last couple of years, and obviously what happened at 12 on Spieth will haunt him for life. You saw that in the expression last year. You saw in and obviously Danny Willett. And I'm going to jump ahead to last year, because last year I think Spieth makes his run. Ricky makes his run in birdies 18. If Spieth's ball doesn't hit the tree, who knows what happens? Remember, that ball hit a tree, folks. And obviously he was able to have his moment or not have his moment because of that. And
yeah,
it gave it to Patrick Reed in one of the more bizarre finishes, embraces that we've ever seen in a golf tournament. The roars for Patrick were not there. And whether it's the love-hate relationship, whether it's the Captain America thing, whether it's the way, you know, his whole private life.
He's just a very polarizing guy. It's just hard to get around.
He's a very polarizing guy.
You know?
Where you look at, you know, just in general, the way he's treated, I think that's an underwritten. So many people focus on the family. So many people focus on Captain America, polarizing. Not enough people talked about the roars that day. And if you go back and watch it, the roars were different than it was, for example, for Rick. I mean, that crowd was openly rooting for Ricky last year. And
yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I mean, he's going to be a guy that we're going to look at this week too. He's got some decent form recently, and he's got history at this course. So kind of with that, let's talk about guys that we're looking at who have opportunity this week. If you follow Jeremy on Twitter, again, it's at Jay Shill. He's always good, and he's always coming correct with the Tiger Woods updates. So, Jeremy, I told you last week I got to see Tiger at the match play. He was preparing that higher ball flight and had a nice showing in Austin. What do you think about his outlook this week and what you're looking to see out of his game as kind of the most important parts for him to contend?
Just one last thing on last thing. Sergio in 17 was like Phil in 04. No matter what you thought about Sergio, that was an embracing of a moment by the patrons of somebody who finally had his moment. And that 180 for Sergio, I think, is something that is really cool and really impressive. And Sergio obviously did it to help him win, you know, bouncing back on the second nine. How do I feel about Tiger? Was that the question?
Yeah, pretty much want to see where what you think is most important for him this week too.
You know, look, I thought that missing that putt Saturday at the match play was the best thing that could ever have happened to him. And the best thing for fans is that he missed it on a misread and not a bad stroke. Tiger hates missing bad strokes. Hates when he puts a bad stroke on it. And that's why obviously he called it Matt Cullen at the Players. So to miss it on a misread gives him momentum, first of all. And second of all, he was able to go to Augusta with positive momentum with the driver and positive momentum overall with the putter. The question is going to be the same as it was last year, which is how the heck will he hit his irons? He didn't hit his irons close enough. And one of the reasons why Maria Fassi could not give the run at Jennifer Kupcho in the women's amateur like she would have wanted was because on 16, she hit it above the slope. And it's not that, you know, it was the classic Sunday hole location. And it's a very fine line, as you know, Alex, between hitting your mark and not hitting your mark there. And you don't hit your marks at Augusta, it's magnified versus, you know, the Valero Texas Open. And if you look at Tiger this year, and if you look at Tiger Just in the way he struck the ball versus last year, his proximity to the green number, he's 33rd in proximity to the green. Proximity to the hole. It's 35 feet, 6 inches. I'm going to roll this back a year and just show people this is not a lot of measured rounds for Tiger. It's only 15. Over the course of 59 last year, it was 34 feet, 4 inches. It doesn't sound like a lot, but that 1 foot can make all the difference at Augusta. He has to hit his spots exactly. He's got room to maneuver, obviously, if the driver's not perfectly on points, although obviously you can't hit it right down 11. For example. But if he can hit it well, I think he'll be fine on the greens. His short game's fine at the moment. To me, it's the short game in wedges and that proximity to the hole. It's just not been there to start this year at times for Tiger. And, for example, approaches from 100 to 125, he's 103rd. And from 50 to 125, he's 120th. That's not going to work next week, Alex.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess we're going to have to watch him on the putting green Monday through Wednesday and see how he
adjusts. Well, yeah, see how his distance putting is to then see how that matches up to his iron game and what he's doing. One other thing I'll just mention with Tiger, which is that the weather forecast next week is very good. And we know Tiger and bad weather is something that doesn't work well now with the back, and obviously that led to the neck. You were out there. How bad was Sunday at the match play?
It was rough. It was like a December in Austin, probably 50s with a consistent wind. It was not pretty by any stretch of the imagination.
And that's why I think it was so big that Tiger missed it. He only had one quick turnaround. It wasn't as bad Saturday as Sunday. He avoided brutal weather on Sunday. He's going to be fresh, and I think with the heat that'll be coming, and it's 70s and low 80s, 50s in the morning, maybe high 40s, but not for, you know, the time slot the Tiger's usually in. It's doable. It's very doable spring weather for Tiger next week, and I think that's big.
Yeah, good stuff. So let's take a look quickly at the odds before we wrap things up here. Obviously, Dustin Johnson and Rory are guys that are going to be favored as they are pretty much every single week on the PGA Tour. But I just want to get a couple of glimpses at what you're looking at. I talked about my picks earlier on this week's episode. But Jeremy, just shout out maybe a few players who aren't necessarily at the top of every single sports book who you see as maybe having a chance to take home the trophy and the green jacket on Sunday.
Rafa Cabrera Bello is 101. He has shown good form lately. Matt Wallace, I believe, is the new Terrell Hatton and could be the new Danny Willett, that international guy who American audiences go, who? And suddenly shows up. He's 125-1. And if you keep going back, there is always somebody in this way back group that just shows up on a leaderboard and you go, huh? Really? You? Yeah, you? Yeah. Well, first of all, how is Charlie Hoffman 150-1? Charlie Hoffman owns Thursdays and Fridays at Augusta.
That's right. He's a big Thursday and Friday guy in general as well, too.
I don't have those odds, but I'm sure there's odds books out there for the 18 or 36 hole lead. If you see those numbers, folks, go buy that. He's a great top five or top 10 pick. And I'm just going to throw out this name just because I just like the way that his game seems to be trending. But I just think that somebody in this way back group, whether it's an Aaron Wise, whether it's, you know, even and they're long shots back here, but Eddie Pepperell and Keegan, you know, your boy Keegan. There's some guys back there. Cameron Smith, who's 40-1, is obviously higher up, but not a name that I think is going to pop for a lot of people. That's where I would look. Yeah. I would look at Rafa. I would look at Matt Wallace. I would look at Pepperell, Hoffman for 36 or 18 hole leads, and then Aaron Wise down there at 250-1. I think that those are my guys in the way back scenario. I've said Ricky's going to win this thing forever, so that's my pick, and I'll keep picking Ricky to win forever, just because I think that it'll just it's just the perfect place for Ricky.
Yeah, there's a few guys I'm really stubborn with at Augusta, and he's probably one of them alongside Jordan Spieth too. So
same thing with Justin Thomas too.
Some intriguing picks for sure going down to the bottom of the line there with Jeremy Schilling, host of the Teeing Up podcast. Jeremy, anyone else that you got news or notes on that we should be looking out for towards the top of the world golf rankings as we head to into Masters Week here at Augusta? Maybe some guys that could contend that are not necessarily on the top of our radar.
Well, here's my question for you, which is, how do you feel about Tommy Fleetwood, and is this the time for him to take that next step? Because we've been waiting for it.
Yeah, I have been. I mean, he's striking the piss out of the ball right now. I feel like his confidence is in a good spot, but it's Saturday seems to be the one that kills him. He seems to be a great Thursday, Friday, and Sunday golfer, but those 36-hole leads have been kind of a bugaboo for him. So I think that's going to be the main day I'm going to be watching for him.
Yeah, so that's what I would say to your listeners as we finish up on Augusta here, which is I just don't know if he's ready to, 25-1, it's a nice number, but I don't know if he's ready to take that next step. I would think Tony Finau at 30-1 is a better option than Fleetwood at 25-1.
Yeah, it's been a bit for Finau too. Yeah. Just trying to crack through. This would be quite a moment for him to do so. Anyway. So there's a lot of guys towards the top of the world golf ranking, definitely in good form as we head into the first major of the golf championship season. Jeremy Schilling on Twitter at Jay Schill, also a very, very noted New York sports fan. Jeremy, I want to get a quick take from you on the newly released New York Jets uniforms that were unveiled earlier this week. What were your thoughts on that rollout from the Jets?
Why do you have to redo things? Can you explain this to me? I look, the uniforms are fine. The black is too much. It is what it is. Why do you have to redo the logo and like New York on there? It's just too much. They're fine. They're okay. The black is overdone. The white's great. The green, the white's my favorite. The green's probably my second favorite. I think the black may look good, but God bless the broadcasters who have to spot those numbers.
Oh, yeah, that's a good call. Didn't think about that angle either.
But why change the logo? Makes all my stuff, not the right stuff anymore. Does this mean I have to buy a new hat? Like, these are first world problems, Alex. Come on.
Yeah, those are lots of implications. Yeah, I didn't realize the fallout on the merchandise end for the fan end, too. Yeah, not just the appearance on TV.
Well, that's the point. I mean, the merchandise end is supposed to lead to something. But for me, it's just unnecessary.
Good stuff from Jeremy, as always. Jeremy, real quick, why don't you shout out your podcast and where people can interact with you and get more of your golf coverage as well?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. First of all, thank you for having me on. I've been waiting to come on The Course of Life. I highly recommend The Course of Life podcast. I will recommend it when you come on my show this week. Teeing It Up with Jeremy Schilling. That's the name of it. You can find it on Apple Podcasts. You can also find it on podbean.com. Those are the only two platforms I'm currently on. You can tweet me at JSCHIL. So my last name has two L's. The Twitter username has one L. That's where you can find me, and you can ask me all my crazy stuff about why I think Jose Maria Olazabal at 2001 has no shot to win, even though you think he does.
Man, he always just leaves with an intriguing teaser on the field as well. Thanks for the nuggets and everything. Enjoy your Masters week. I know we will, and we'll see you soon again on The Course of Life.
You got it, Alex. Thanks for having me.
And that kind of puts a wrap on this Mega Masters Week episode.
Yes.
It's our first one ever,
the
Alex.
First annual.
It's kind of in the books. And really, we didn't get a chance to do this through the entire episode. So it's time for us to give our picks for the Masters. I'll start us off. I'll go ahead. I'll give you my pick to win.
To win.
And even though I said it earlier, that I would rather see Jordan Spieth put that jacket on for a second time, I'm going to say that Rory McIlroy is going to finish the career Grand Slam.
That would be a juicy storyline. After seeing what he did at Sawgrass a few weeks back and seeing him in person in that crazy match against Tiger at the Match Play, an interesting little bookend to the spring if he could close out the career Grand Slam for sure, Mike. My pick to win it all, a guy that I'm just out on in terms of personality. We have been all over this guy. I've given him the Cheapskate nickname. However, he is playing too good for me to pass up. Matt Kuchar, coming off a runner-up performance at the Match Play and a great finish at the Valero Texas Open for a solid 4 days there. I like Matt Kuchar to get it done for his first major championship, just ball striking this course to death. Matt Kuchar, my pick to win. And then, Mike, let's throw out a dark horse. And I have a feeling which way you might be going with this, but I'll let you have the floor.
Yeah, you know, the surprising thing is I think I've said this person a lot of times in the past, either between ourselves or if we go way back in the day when we were doing this at Quinnipiac University, I threw this guy's name out. He's been playing really well on the senior circuit right now, and someone who loves this course has the perfect attitude, Freddie Couples.
Oh, yeah, Mike, everyone has one in their group of friends. You're the Fred Couples truther every year.
I am.
Every year. You come with the conspiracy that he's going to get this done one more time. So I like that dark horse. And mine is going off in my picks that you can check on my Twitter. Again, I'm at Course of Life 1, and he is at MWRINC. My dark horse this week for the Masters, 200-1 odds. Mike, Jimmy Walker, a guy that's won a few times on the PGA Tour and is a major champion. He won the PGA Championship a few years ago. And Mike, he has made the cut the last 5 years in a row that he's played at this tournament. So he's got a decent history, just hasn't put it all together yet. So Jimmy Walker is my dark horse. That officially puts the cap on our mega Masters Week episode.
Well, friends, we've reached the end, and we'll be back next week. We'll talk about everything that happened this weekend during the Masters. We'll also have a conversation with another Quinnipiac alum. We just keep bringing him in.
Nice.
Seth Rothman with the Yes Network. We'll learn about everything he does when he tweets out about all the different crazy statistics for the Yankees and more. We'll have him next week. Plus, again, everything that happened at Augusta National. For Alex and Michael, we'll see you guys next week.